Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day from Movement. Whether your mom is into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, everything at Movement is up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale. A watch is a gift that celebrates all the time you spent with mom. And a Movement watch is even more than that. Movement uses industry-leading materials for their fresh, modern watch designs, from technically complex ceramics to vintage-inspired style, all for an incredible value your wrist and wallet will both love. And with one-size-fits-all convenience and fast, free shipping and returns, it's a stress-free shopping experience. Save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with Movement. Get up to 50% off site-wide during their Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You okay?
Yeah. Just thinking about all the shit Sharon had to go through. And Nate were referring to the American test subject like Isaiah wasn't even a real person. Just makes me wonder how many people have to get steamrolled to make way for this hunk of metal.
Well, it depends on who you ask. The hunk of metal saved a lot of lives.
Yeah, I get that, all right. Maybe I made a mistake.
You did?
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't have put it in a museum. Maybe I should have destroyed it.
Look, that show represents a lot of things to a lot of people, including me. World's upside down. We need a new cap, and it ain't gonna be Walker, so before you go and destroy it, I'm gonna take it from him myself.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the MCU Diaries. It's a podcast dedicated to every Marvel Studios series on Disney Plus. So sit back, relax, and let's break down Earth's mightiest heroes. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU Diaries. I'm your host, Blake Larson, and I am torn. I am so torn about this episode. There is a lot of things to love, and there are that many more things to hate in this episode of The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. The first thing that I do love, of course, is what you just listened to, which is Bucky alluding to the fact that he could be the next Captain America. And that is something that we posited, or at least theorized that could happen as a nice bit of subversion for our expectations of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier last episode in the apropos of nothing section of the episode. So that is why you always, ladies and gentlemen, listen to the apropos of nothing, because there are fun tidbits and things that can be built upon in future episodes, even though they don't fit into the narrative of the story that we're trying to tell at that very given moment. But again, as much as I did like that portion, there's a lot here that it really disappointed me in this particular episode. And we'll get into that in a little bit. I think there are three major things that need some attention. But again, we'll get there in a little bit. And before we do, wanted to remind you that you can check out this podcast among the many others that we have at Mary and Blake Media at maryandblake.com, whether it is Outlander for Outlander Cast or This Is Us for This Is Us 2, or you can check out the Bridgerton podcast, the Potterverse for Harry Potter. There's a ton of stuff going on over there. And if you ever do want to get in touch via social media or email, you can just look us up at Mary and Blake on all the various social media platforms and email us at maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. And I would love it, too, if you guys gave us a written review on Apple Podcasts or Facebook. That does help promote the podcast, and it does give some context to people who are looking to discover more podcasts about the particular subject they're looking for. In this case, it would be the MCU. So please do take a moment to, if you enjoy this podcast and you do find that we're giving value to you, take a moment to write a written review on either Apple Podcasts or Facebook. But for now, let's get into the show, shall we? That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, episode 103, The Power Broker. And as much as I really want to like this episode, and I truly do, The Power Broker, episode 103, is an example of when a story allows its plot to inform its characters, as opposed to its characters informing its plot. And that is a major problem. In fact, if you're a frequent Mary and Blake listener, you know that we have a bunch of commandments for our show and for our company. And one of the commandments is, plot shall never inform the character. The character shall always inform the plot. And meaning, we don't want things to happen because they need to happen to serve the story. Things just shouldn't happen because they need to. Things should happen because that's what the characters dictate. Their actions and their motivations and their decisions should always be based on who they are and why they are, as opposed to what the story is and what the story needs to be. This is a major problem for this episode. And save for two specific moments, I think there are three significant issues which plague this episode's ability to tell anything more than what I would consider to be a bland semi-sequel to Captain America: Civil War. And we will touch on those two moments that I think are actually quite exquisite in a little bit. But let's dive in first to the three stumbling blocks that I see. First, as I said before, stuff happens in this episode. Stuff happens because it needs to in order for the plot to move forward. That's it. Things happen. And they do not because the characters dictate them, but because the plot needs it to happen. Second, I don't know if the Flag Smashers are supposed to be sympathetic villains, or if I'm supposed to really hate them, or if they're just misunderstood. I don't know. And that's a problem too. Because as of this moment, halfway through the series, they are serving as the driving force for the entire plot, really. And lastly, I can tell you, I enjoyed the episode. I think from just an entertainment perspective, I enjoyed it. There's a lot of fun action and, you know, there's some cool sequences and everything. But I will tell you this, I've already seen better versions of the action sequences and the setups and everything. I've already seen better versions of this entire episode in other films, whether it is Ocean's 11 or in this particular case, John Wick. At first glance, though, this episode seems to center around our two heroes, Sam and Bucky, blurring the lines between heroism and pragmatism, sacrificing some of their well-rooted integrity to solve the apparent Flag Smasher's mystery. They do this by either breaking Zemo out of prison, traveling to Madripoor, and we will talk more about this in a little while, and commiserating with the MCU's hive of scum and villainy in Madripoor, or, you know, just casually murdering a large swath of that scum in villainy. In either case, Sam and Bucky are hot on the case to unearth the super soldier serum mystery. And I feel stupid saying that, but that's what this is. These guys are sacrificing some of their integrity and making decisions to solve a super soldier serum mystery. It's a thing. And this episode focuses a lot on we need X to lead us to Y. And then we need Y to lead us to Z. I need the thing that gets me to the thing that gets me to the thing. It's a little frustrating. And here's a bigger issue at play. I mean, for the most part, the Falcon and the Winter Soldier actually has performed relatively well in the motivations for its characters as it relates to the plot. In other words, the plot in the show so far hasn't always informed the characters. It's actually been the other way around for the most part for the past two episodes. Sam and Bucky joined up in the beginning of episode two for reasons that were personal to both of them, as well as reasons that were independent of our end goal here. John Walker, as much of a clown as he is, he acts the way he does because he is unendingly insecure, and he performs his duties through that lens. But this episode, boy, does this episode not do that at all. And we should have known. I should have known that this was coming because we caught a minor sniff of this notion with last week's gotcha moment. You know, the last cliffhanger ending when Bucky revealed that we were going to see Zemo concerning Hydra's possible ties to the newly surfaced super soldier serum. Again, I feel so stupid saying that. I don't know why. And at the end of that episode, of course, the reasoning was that Zemo, of all people, would have a beat on any intelligence about this serum because he knew all of the, in quotes, secrets. And sure, you can squint at that and maybe see some connection there. But as I said last episode, it was lazy writing at best. And it happens only because the writers wanted to reintroduce Zemo into the storytelling mix. There's nothing specific or detailed about Zemo, which prevents any other character in the MCU from having or performing the same task. It happened at the end of last episode because Zemo has a tie to Bucky because of Captain America Civil War. It happened because that's what the show needed to happen. And while I could whistle past the graveyard as it relates to Zemo's involvement in the show, and to be completely honest, I'm happy to do so because I love me some MCU Helmet Zemo, there are instances that I can't look past in this episode. Zemo breaks out of prison with extraordinary ease, and Bucky somehow slips him a key card to use. How this happened? Well, the story needed Zemo out of prison to take our characters to Madripoor. And what's worse about this sequence is that instead of focusing on some great acting and pathos being featured between Zemo and Bucky, and I'll get there too, all I kept thinking about in this moment is, how the hell are Sam and Bucky allowed to go see Zemo? One guy in Sam is an Avenger who, as Bucky states himself, would do nothing but rile this prisoner up. Oh, and the other guy, yeah, he is Bucky, you know, just the guy who Zemo manipulated and framed for blowing up the UN. Not too long ago. Not to mention that Zemo also knows the specific key phrases that can scramble Bucky's brains faster than Gordon Ramsay's perfect scrambled eggs recipe. You would think that, like, the warden of the prison even if there was 1% chance of Bucky being turned back into the most murdery cyborg this side of Skynet, would take a look at these two guys, Sam and Bucky, and be like, yeah, you know what, guys? We're all set, fellas. Thanks for taking a visit to Germany. Why don't you go to Berlin and check out all the cool art and stuff? No, that doesn't happen. They're not told to go pound sand, which would be the safe thing to do. No, it doesn't happen, and they just suddenly have access to Helmut Zemo because the story needs them to see Zemo, and Zemo needs to be broken out in order for the story to continue. And speaking of Zemo, now all of a sudden he's the Sokovian equivalent to Bruce Wayne? Listen, I get it. I know all you comic book nerds that are listening to this. You're going to blah me to death about how he's actually a Baron in the comics and he's and royalty is part of his backstory. Yeah. Sure, whatever. I get it. The MCU version of Zemo, however, was introduced by Friday to Tony in Captain America Civil War as nothing more than simply a colonel in the Sokovian Special Forces. That's it. That was his title. Colonel, Sokovian Special Forces. And, you know, of course, when Zemo was taking down the guard with in the prison with real ease, I was like, how is this guy taking out a trained guard? And how is nobody paying attention to this? But then I remembered that he did have Special Forces training in the MCU, so I can make an excuse for it. I can squint at that and say, okay, that makes sense. I can see that if he gets the jump on the guy, I get it. But if Friday doesn't introduce him as a Baron and only as a Colonel, I mean, does that mean he's not a Baron? Well, not necessarily, but it would be logical to assume Tony Stark's AI assistant would provide him with all the relevant information about the guy who was the main villain pulling all the strings behind the Avengers, you know, apparent civil war. One would also assume Zemo being a Baron would probably be chief among the pertinent intelligence that Friday would present. But that's neither here nor there. And it's neither here nor there because that's just what the story needs to happen in this episode. The Baron aspect as a retcon for Zemo accomplishes two objectives for the story. One, it allows our characters a way in to Madripoor and to have all the necessary resource to achieve whatever the goals the story needs. But frustratingly, for someone who loves Captain America Civil War and loves the Zemo that was created for Captain America Civil War, it also somewhat invalidates, well, no. No, it totally, completely invalidates one of the major operative character themes for Civil War in Zemo. Zemo being a simple man who had some training and lost everything because of the Avengers' actions in Sokovia. As a result, that man became obsessed with revenge and transformed his weaknesses into his strengths, while forcing the Avengers, who are the most powerful group of people on this green and blue planet, he forced the Avengers' strength to devolve into their weaknesses. He was the perfect mirror for the Avengers. A man who was nothing, who's just a colonel in the army, a colonel in Sokovian Special Forces, knew he could not take down the Avengers. He knew he had nothing to lose except making sure that the Avengers tore themselves apart. And the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, as a result of this retcon, now gives Zemo every single freaking resource on the planet. A warehouse full of antique cars, a private jet, and most importantly, a non-working refrigerator on that private jet. Plus, Zemo gets a really sweet purple mask that's just been chilling in this car-filled warehouse because, well, reasons. The story needs him to have it, so he does. And the story needs him to have it because that's what the comic books do. He wore a purple mask in the comic books because he was badly burned in a fight with Captain America. That's what he does to hide his face. Let's also, in this instance, maybe we could just look over the little fact too that this mask means that Zemo had nefarious intent prior to his wife and children being killed in Sokovia, which would once again invalidate this thematic motivation in Civil War. But again, I'm not trying to poke holes. I'm just saying what they have done to Zemo's character is maddening. Anyway, Zemo takes our boys to Sokovia to meet up with Selby, someone he has dealt with in the past, and she just happens to have all the right answers. And again, Zemo knows her because of reasons. And everything goes swimmingly well until Smiling Tiger, receives a phone call from his sister Sarah, and everything at that point goes to crap, while resulting eventually in Selby's death from an unknown sniper. Why does Sarah call Sam at that very moment? It's nothing urgent. Nothing. She's not in danger. She just needs to have a chat about the bank at that very moment. The show needed Sam and Bucky and Zemo on the run. So, instead of getting all the answers that they need, the show has Sarah call and muck the whole thing up. Moreover, I don't know if this is supposed to be a funny scene or a suspenseful scene or if it's supposed to be exactly how it came off. Like, awkward. And just like the snake in shot scene. Like, yeah, okay, cool. You cut off a snake and, like, you cut it up and you put it in a drink and, there's some comedy to it, but, like, it comes off awkward. In the end, though, we learn just enough to move the plot forward, but not enough so that we keep our terrific trio, that's what I'm gonna call them from right now, the terrific trio, Zemo, Bucky, and Sam, we don't learn enough so that we keep them in the dark on who the power broker is and maintain whatever mystery Malcolm Spellman and the writer of this episode, Derek Kolstad, are trying to keep from us as viewers. So, Sam and Bucky and Zemo, the terrific trio, they're back on the run. And while on the run, though, and seemingly cornered by nameless and faceless power broker employed, perhaps? I don't know, random baddies? Yay, guess who it is? Sharon Carter. Yeah, you remember her, Agent 13 from Captain America Civil War? She's here too, and she shows up and just murders everybody. That's right. Sharon Carter just happens to be in Madripoor and has either the best luck on the planet and being at the right party at the exact right time, or she has enough intelligence from somewhere, I don't know where, but she has it, to know that Bucky and Sam will be where and when they are when they're supposed to be there. But then again, no one in Madripoor is supposed to know that they are Bucky and Sam. No one is supposed to know that they're there. They're just supposed to be the Winter Soldier and Smiling Tiger, who just happen to be hanging out with a conspicuously freed Helmet Zemo. Nevertheless, though, she shows up at the right time to save the day and just happens to be influential enough in Madripoor now, a mere 6 months after reappearing from the blip, that she throws parties with the most elite Madriporians? Madriporites? I don't know what they would be. To sell, like, real art. She's somehow come into this art and made enough money to have a lavish lifestyle. Once again, the show needed her to be there and to have enough clout to relay the information, not because it was within Sharon's character to do so, but because that's what it needed to move forward in its momentum. And the excuse that the show gives is, listen, I got you that shield. I got you those wings. I lost everything because of you. I had nowhere to go. So I went to Madripoor, and they don't allow extradition. So that's where I went. And then the blip happened, and then I came back. And now I'm big and powerful and famous in Madripoor. But I'm willing to give all that up because I'm going to make a deal with you so that I can go back to the U.S. and live a random life. I'm going to give up all this power and wealth and money to go back to the U.S. and clear my name because that's what I got to do. What? There are countless other instances of the show prioritizing plot over character in this episode, and I'm not going to go into all of them because I don't want to sit here and just shit on the show all day. But another main issue is that I'm not 100% clear on what the heck is actually going on with the Flag Smashers. Are they bad guys? Are they misunderstood? Are they good guys doing bad things? Or, I mean, we're halfway through this series and I still have no clue. I have no clue. I mean, yes, Carly does blow up a building full of soldiers and people by the end of the episode. Yeah, not great, Bob. And she legitimizes this action because this is the only message they understand. But what exactly is the message she is trying to convey? And to whom is she trying to convey it? Is it to the American government? Is it to the GRC? Who is this going to? And from what I gather, the Flag Smashers want the unity of the world to revert back to the way it was during the blip. One people, one world. And they stole the super soldier serum from a really bad dude named the Power Broker. They used it on themselves to help their cause. And now they're redistributing vaccines and supplies to those who have been left behind after the blip, to people that have nowhere to go, have no resources. They're taking the resources and redistributing to them. Now, it's one thing for me to be confused about the Flag Smashers' significance and their utility to the plot, but it's a whole other thing for why Sam and Bucky are so intent on stopping them. What about the Flag Smashers' actions, other than their like really ominous name, suggests that two Avengers need to commit their full attention to the Flag Smashers' affairs? Maybe it's because they exist as super soldiers and that's enough reason to combat them? Maybe. But at the same time, the show is also telling us as viewers that Carly just wants to help the unfortunate. And eventually she'll go back. Well, once all this is said and done, she'll go and be a teacher. Yeah, she's got to be stopped. She's got to be stopped now. Furthermore, the show is also telling us that Wilfred Nagel made the super soldier serum for Power Broker. 20 vials, to be exact. And those vials were stolen by Carly while he was apparently in the process of making more. Nagel still had not, I don't know, scienced up a complete serum yet since the theft. So there are no other vials to be had in his lab. So naturally, he was murdered by Zemo, which does make sense for his character, Zemo's character, to do something like that. But that leaves the threat of more super soldiers being created now moot. Yet, Sam and Bucky continue on because reasons. So if there's no threat for more super soldiers and the Flag Smashers are just trying to help people, you know, granted, in a little bit forceful ways in their applications, why are they the bad guys again? I mean, I could see it if their goal was to physically topple governments the way that the Winter Soldier program was originally founded on. Like that, and I understand why Zemo wants to get rid of the super soldiers. Like, that makes sense to me. And if they were doing things the way that the original Winter Soldier program was intended to do, that would make sense. They would need to be stopped, and they would need to be stopped by at least an Avenger or two if they're toppling governments. But the show isn't doing that here. The Flag Smasher just taking stuff and giving it to the people that are unfortunately not part of a country, or they don't have nowhere to go. They don't got any resources. So again, why are these guys the bad guys? And a lot of this confusion is not immediately evident because the show is moving so fast that there's not time to stop and think about its mechanics. Hey, we're going to see Zemo. Wait, why were they allowed to be there? Who cares? Look, a prison break. Wait, hold on. How did the key card get in the cell? Wait, who cares? Antique cars and a private jet. Wait, how is no one aware that Zemo's private jet is now suddenly in Germany after he breaks out? Who cares? It's Madripoor, yay, and Sharon Carter in a brutal fight scene. The show's moving way too quick for you to stop and think and say, hold on, time out. How is all this happening again? And the fault belongs to the writing and to the writer of this episode, Derek Kolstad. Kolstad is a good writer, and you definitely, I know you know his work. He wrote this little franchise called John Wick. And you can feel Kolstad's fingerprints all over this episode. Whether it was the club scene with Selby, or meeting Selby in general, or the signature gun-fu exhibited by Sharon during her major fight scene amidst all the storage containers. In the middle of all it, I was half expecting Sharon to say, yeah, I'm thinking I'm back. Well, I would have given Kolstad a lot of credit for that. I really would have. And it's not to say that I don't love me some John Wick. I absolutely do. But that's the problem. What we all just watch for this episode, it was John Wick light. I've seen all the fight scenes. I've seen the club scene, the over-the-top characters, and the somewhat questionable logic all before in John Wick. And it was done a lot better in those films. Ultimately, they happen in The Falcon and the Winter Soldier because it needs to, but also because it's telling you to think one thing and one thing only. This is cool. And it is. In John Wick. Where the episode goes right, however, I know I just spent this entire past 30 minutes giving you a diatribe on why this episode was bad and wrong. There's actually a lot of good stuff in this episode, too. The direction is fantastic. The action is visceral. It is tiring. And that is a running theme throughout this entire series so far. The action is right in your face. And when you're done watching it, you are tired. And there are also some other specific points that are really good, too. First, Zemo confronts Bucky with the words that are supposed to reset Bucky's brain, just to see what would happen. I love that choice. And while Bucky maintains they don't work anymore, Zemo says that there's still something left in there that pushes Bucky. And this is important because Zemo forces Bucky to once again play the role of the Winter Soldier in Madripoor. But is he really playing a role? Bucky is terrifying. And Sebastian Stan, ever since he was introduced in The Winter Soldier as the Winter Soldier, he is even more terrifying. I love Sebastian Stan in this role. But the ease with which Bucky dispatches an entire bar full of what would likely be the world's most talented bounty hunters, it just comes so naturally and effectively. He may maintain that he's not a killer anymore, but there is definitely still something in him that erupts when it needs to. And let's contrast this with the effectiveness with Zemo's rather poignant comments on how we place heroes on a pedestal.
Must have really looked up to Steven, but I realized something when I met him. The danger with people like him America's super soldiers is that we put them on pedestals.
Watch your steps, Zemo.
They become symbols, icons, and then we start to forget about their flaws. From there, cities fly, innocent people die, movements are formed, wars are fought. You remember that, right? As a young soldier sent to Germany to stop a mad icon. Do we want to live in a world full of people like the Red Skull?
And when you consider how Bucky looks at Captain America or Steve Rogers or the symbol that is the shield, he absolutely places all of this on a pedestal. You can see why Bucky ends up telling Sam that he will take the shield before Sam destroys it. Lastly, the show also nails its characterization of John Walker just right. Despite his enormous resources, Walker is still hamstrung by the rules of the government, and you can tell that it frustrates him. He wants to prove so badly that he is an effective Captain America that he seemingly wants to even bend some of the rules to prove it by the episode's end. And that, do you know who I am? That line could have been super cheesy. But honestly, it really worked. Because it was played perfectly by Wyatt Russell. He may be the new Captain America, but no one cares. And even if they did, no one believes it. The show is even saying you, Walker ain't going to be the next Captain America. And we talked about this last episode. Either way, John Walker is a man who is desperate, and he's certainly out of touch with himself and the role, and he's running out of options to prove his worth, to prove the fact that he is Captain America. And to emphasize this point, the director makes an impressive choice to zoom right in on Walker's face and blur the background and give him like a haze as he comes out of his failure to capture any of the Flag Smasher. It's perfect visual storytelling to exemplify Walker's tenuous grip on his reality and on his grip in being Captain America. And by episode's end, though, we're left with nothing more than Carly blowing up a building, our terrific trio driving away in a muscle car, Walker in the wind just looking for somebody to help him, and another gotcha moment when we have the leader of the Wakandan security guard show up and say that she wants Zemo. It's another cliffhanger moment. Yes, guess what? We're going to get to this next week. You miss Wakanda, right? Yay! It all just feels perfunctory, like it's just supposed to happen. We're in the middle of our six-hour movie, and there is no transformational moment yet. There's nothing to set the rest of our story, the propulsion, the momentum. There's nothing going forward other than plot mechanics. And it's a very fast and frustrating turn for a show that was exploring some real pathos in its characters for the past two episodes. In other words, it's John Wick light. Apropos of nothing for Falcon and the Winter Soldier 103, the Power Broker. We get a passing mention of Nagel's work deriving from the blood of people who were experimented on in the past with semi-stable super soldier serum science-y terms. Implicit in that revelation is that it was actually Isaiah Bradley's blood, and in the comics it is Wilfred Nagel who turns Isaiah Bradley into a super soldier. We also get a passing mention of Nagel continuing the work of Dr. Erskine, the good doctor played by Stanley Tucci in Captain America the First Avenger, who gave Steve Rogers his powers. Note, too, that when they first introduced Zemo, they have the theme created by Henry Jackman in Captain America Civil War playing. It was just a slight touch back to Captain America Civil War. Very cool. One of the best running jokes in the MCU is how Sam and Bucky refuse to move their respective seats up when one is in front of the car and the other is in the back. This is such a cool and great reference, and it mirrors one of the most genuinely funny moments in Captain America Civil War and the MCU writ large. Of course, that being when Sam refuses to move the seat up in Captain America Civil War for Bucky. Zemo was reading Machiavelli. Okay, guys. All right, writers. Let's calm down. I mean, time out. That's so on the nose. And I mean, God, next thing you know, you're going to start dropping some Ship of Theseus references in your shows. And never mind. Zemo also refers to the Avengers' nonchalance as it relates to the Sokovia. To Sokovia, rather. And how there is a memorial there, and none of them showed up. A very, very nice touch by Malcolm Spellman, the head writer, and the writer for this particular episode, again, Derek Kolstad. And, oh my goodness gracious, it is Bucky's little notebook full of names. It's actually Steve's notebook that he kept to catch him up on all the pop culture references in Captain America, the Winter Soldier. The line, he's out of line, but he's right. Oh, a genuinely good moment between our terrific trio. Also referencing Marvin Gaye and how Sam wanted Steve to listen to Trouble Man and Captain America, the Winter Soldier. By the way, notice all the posters in Lowtown of Madripoor saying the power broker is watching. Yep, I can see a path for this show where the Flag Smashers, Sharon Carter, the terrific trio, John Walker and Battlestar all have to team up and take down the power broker. I would not be surprised. Also, don't be surprised if the power broker is also the person in charge of the GRC, and the GRC are actually the bad guys. I would not be surprised there. In Madripoor. Yes, Madripoor in the MCU is a city that is once a pirate city, and there are essentially no laws there. And it's very much like its counterpart in the comics. Yes, even the Lowtown versus Hightown, those that all existed in the comics. And Madripoor in the comics is a really big deal. There's a lot of different things that happened there. And it is often associated with the X-Men and Wolverine in particular. Now, after the WandaVision fakeout with Quicksilver, I'm not going to get too excited here, but if there was a way to introduce Wolverine and the mutants in the MCU, Madripoor is a fun way to do it. It would be a fun way to reintroduce a character like Wolverine or something along those lines, because they often visited there. And that is that, ladies and gents. I hope you enjoyed the episode. That's it for now. I, as you can tell, I was not a big fan. The action was good. It was okay. I liked watching Sharon Carter get her due. You know, she is a badass in this episode, but it feels like she has to be a badass because that's what the show needs. And that's frustrating. That is frustrating. But that is it for now. Let's close it out, shall we? So that's it, ladies and gents. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this episode of the MCU Diaries and watching The Falcon and the Winter Soldier along with me during this whole period. As much as I didn't like this episode, I do like this series, and I do look forward to seeing what happens, where the series goes, and how they're going to solve this mystery between the Flag Smashers, the Power Broker, what is going to happen to Zemo. Will he try to kill Bucky by the series end because he doesn't want any super soldiers? What will he do to inevitably turn on the terrific trio? What will happen to the shield? Who will take up the shield? Will it be Sam? Will he destroy the shield? Will Bucky take the shield from Sam? There's a lot that's happening here, and I do honestly look forward to all of the answers that the series is going to give us. We are halfway through, ladies and gents, and it was just announced that Loki will be coming to our screens mid-June. So look forward to that as well. We will be covering that in addition to The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I look quite forward to that too. Of course, go to jointhenerdclan.com to go to our amazing community where we have all kinds of fun, extra goodies and free swag and book clubs and special episodes and premium podcasts. You don't want to miss out that, and you don't want to miss out on the very special community. As until the next episode, ladies and gents, I'll see you then.
Mother's Day is almost here, and you can get her the most beautiful time-tested gift around. A watch she can wear every day for Movement. Whether mom's into classic dress watches, rare and refined ceramics, or tried-and-true bestsellers, Movement has something she'll love. And right now, you can save big on the best Mother's Day gift ever with up to 50% off site-wide during Movement's Mother's Day sale at MVMT.com. Again, that's up to 50% off at MVMT.com.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.